Welcome to Torah Mecha Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Shira Hochheimer, and today we will be studying Yirmiyahu, Chapter 52. The last six prakim contained nevuos about other nations, concluding with the destruction of Babel. This parak is different than the other prakim in Yirmiyahu. It repeats the last parak in Malachim that describes the actual Churban and its aftermath. Most of the details are the same as that parak in Malachim, with a few differences, which the Mefarshim discuss. Some of these details were already mentioned in Perek Lamites, Chapter 39. The Perek begins by giving us background information about Tzidkiyahu. It tells us that he was 21 years old when he took over from Yehoyachin and then ruled for another 11 years. His mother was Chamutal Bas Yirmiyah Milivna. The Pasuk does not mention his father, Yoshiyahu the Tzaddik, who died when Tzidkiyahu was merely 10 years old. It doesn't tell us that Tzidkiyahu lived through the tumultuous reign of his two older brothers and his nephew before he took the throne. It is no wonder, says Hadas Sofrim, that Tzidkiyahu, with this background, struggled to stand up against the nobles. Verse 2 describes Tzidkiyahu very negatively. Vayas hara b'nei Hashem k'chol asher asa Yehoyakim. And Tzidkiyahu did evil in the eyes of Hashem like all that Yehoyakim did. Chazal say that Tzidkiyahu was righteous, and only his advisors were wicked, which contradicts this pasuk. The Mishpatot Zahav says that Tzidkiyahu was generally righteous, but sinned because he did not listen to Yirmiyahu when he told Tzidkiyahu to surrender to the king of Babel. Tzidkiyahu was too afraid that the nation would mock him if he did the right thing. He also broke the vow that he swore in the name of Hashem not to rebel against Nebuchadnezzar. Even though the Sanhedrin nullified the vow, it was still a chilul Hashem. Verse 3 connects the destruction of Yerushalayim and Tzidkiyahu's behavior. The pasuk says, "Ki al af Hashem haisav Yerushalayim v'Yehuda ad hashlicho osa me'al panav," because the wrath of Hashem was against Yerushalayim and Yehuda until He cast them away from before His presence. Vayimrod Tzidkiyahu b'melech Babel. Tzidkiyahu rebelled against the king of Babel. If a person were to list the reasons for the Churban, they would point at Tzidkiyahu and say it's his fault. But the Pasuk, according to Rashi and Tzidkiyahu David, tells us that the real issue, the first issue listed, was that the Jewish people were sinners. They deserved to be kicked out of the land. The way that happened was through the choices of Tzidkiyahu and his rebellion against Nebuchadnezzar. Tzidkiyahu was just a manifestation of the real reason for the Galus. Perek continues, "In the ninth year of Tzidkiyahu's reign, in the 10th day of the 10th month, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babel, came with his army to put a siege on Yerushalayim. We commemorate this date with the fast day of Asar B'Teves. Nebuchadnezzar started the siege, but then went to Rivla and Hamas to manage the conflict from afar so he wouldn't risk getting the diseases that race through an army that is laying a siege. Chazal say that Nebuchadnezzar engraved his image on his chariots so that his presence would be felt by his army even when he was not there. The siege lasted until the ninth day of the month of Tammuz in the 11th year of Tzidkiyahu's reign. At that point, there was no food left for the Am Haaretz, for the general population in the city, as the famine had exhausted all their supplies. People were starving, so says the Malbim. The people inside the city breached the walls so that they could get food. Verse 7, V'chol anshei ha-melchama yivrchu, and the men in the military fled. They left the city at night through a hidden entrance to flee to Yericho. The Kastim realized that they had lost their priority prisoners, the king, so they chased him and caught up to him in the plains of Yericho. The Jewish people entered the land of Israel and began their conquest in Yericho, and now they were losing their sovereignty at that same place. Soldiers brought Tzidkiyahu to Rivla in Hamas, where Nebuchadnezzar was camped. Verse 9, Vayadaber ito mishpatim, and he, meaning Nebuchadnezzar, spoke against him, Tzidkiyahu, judgments. Nebuchadnezzar rebuked Tzidkiyahu for rebelling against him, even though Tzidkiyahu had sworn in the name of Hashem. In Sefer Melachim, this phrase is written in plural. They spoke to him. Even though all the officers were harassing Tzidkiyahu, the real message and weight of the message came from Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar chose with the ultimate cruelty by Yeshchat Melech Bavel es b'nei Tzidkiyahu le'inav. Nebuchadnezzar himself slaughtered Tzidkiyahu's sons in front of him. In Sefer Melachim, this phrase is also written in the plural. Here, it is emphasizing that Nebuchadnezzar chose and executed this extreme punishment. V'gam es kol sari Yehuda shachat b'Rivlasa. He also slaughtered all the princes of Yehuda in Rivla. Chazal say that these princes were the Sanhedrin that allowed Tzidkiyahu to renege on his vow. Nebuchadnezzar then blinded Tzidkiyahu and put him in heavy iron fetters. He brought him to Babel, where he was put into prison, which the Mishpatzot Zahav says was a hard labor camp until his death. 1 month after the walls of Yerushalayim were breached, in the fifth month, on the 10th day of the month, which was the 19th year of the king Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babel, Nebuzaradan stood before Nebuchadnezzar. In Sefer Melachim, it says that Nebuzaradan was in Yerushalayim on the 7th, and here it says that he was with Nebuchadnezzar in Yerushalayim on the 10th. The Gemara in Tainis resolves the contradiction. The Kastim looted and desecrated the Beis HaMikdash on the 7th, 8th, and most of the 9th day of Av. Right before sunset, while it was still the 9th of Av, they lit the Beis HaMikdash on fire. The Beis HaMikdash burned all of the 10th day of Av. Nebuchadnezzar had spent the whole siege in comfort in Rivla, but when it came to burning the Beis HaMikdash, he insisted on being there so he could get pleasure from the destruction. Nebuzaradan, at the command of Nebuchadnezzar, burned the Beis Hashem, the house of Hashem, the Beis HaMelech, the palace, and all the homes of Yerushalayim, as well as called Beis HaGadol, every great house, which Rashi says are either the shuls or the yeshivos, the source of the power for the Jewish people. They then broke down all the walls of Yerushalayim. After all the violence, Yehuda was left with only some survivors. Nebuzaradan took some poor people, some of the defectors who left the city before it was conquered, and some other commoners to Babel. He allowed some of the most poor people to stay in Israel to tend to vineyards and gardens. The next part of the parak describes in great detail what was looted from the Beis HaMikdash. This description is also found in Sefer Melachim, with some topics expounded on here that were not discussed there. The Kastim began by breaking the large copper structures and fixtures so they could carry the copper to Babel. Verse 18 lists how the soldiers took all the brass utensils from the Beis HaMikdash for themselves, the pots, the shovels, the snuffers, the basins, and the pans. The Pasuk describes these items as Asher Yishar Suvahem Lakachu, everything they served Hashem with, these coarse men took away. These holy items were then used in their homes and for their own ends. There were so many brass utensils that they couldn't even be weighed. The head of the guard looted anything left made of silver or gold for the king's treasury. The Kastim dismantled and took two pillars made of copper. Each pillar was 18 amos tall and had a circumference of 12 amos. It was hollow. The copper that created the pillar was only 4 fingers thick. Each of the tall pillars had a capital that was 5 amos tall, and the capital was decorated with engravings of a net with pomegranates all over it. These pillars were called by Chazal Yachin Ubawaz, and they were made by Shlomo HaMelech. They stood in front of the entrance to the Heichal, to the sanctuary. They were meant to embody the ideals of the Beis HaMikdash as a home of Hashem. Yachin stood to the south of the entrance on the same side as the menorah, which represented the Torah. Rav Breuer says that it was meant to remind the people that the spiritual gifts in the world were meant to serve as a guideline, a tochnit, for the people. Boaz, the second pillar, was on the northern end of the entrance near the Shulchan. The Shulchan represents man's achievement in the world. These two pillars were meant to serve as a reminder for the Jewish people how to lead a Jewish life. Atop the pillars were capitals, which were covered with engravings of pomegranates. The pomegranates were meant to remind the people of the me'il of the Kohen Gadol, his outer shirt, which had bells and pomegranates on the bottom. The pomegranate is full of seeds and represents that the job of the Jewish people is to spread the seeds of Torah, the knowledge of Hashem, wherever they go. The Mishpatzot Zahav says that the circumference of 12 amos represents the ancestors of Shlomo. There were 12 generations from Yehuda to Shlomo. Boaz, the husband of Rus, represents this lineage. There are 18 generations from father to son, from Shlomo HaMelech to the last generation of Yehoyachin, hinted to in the name Yachin, which was what they called the second pillar. The Kastim did not just destroy the Beis HaMikdash. The Rav HaTabachim, the captain of the guard, killed those who served in it. He took Sraya, the Kohen Gadol, Zephania, the deputy Kohen, and 3 of the Shomri HaTzaf, the 3 keepers of the door who kept the keys of the Beis HaMikdash and brought them to Rivla. He also took other individuals, 1 officer, 7 men who had seen the king, the census taker, and 60 other random people. Altogether, 71 people were brought to meet Nebuchadnezzar. The Midrash says that this group were the 71 members of Sanhedrin who Nebuchadnezzar deeply resented. When they got to Rivla, Nebuchadnezzar killed them all. The Perek next gives us account of who escaped from Yehuda. In the 7th year, during the reign of Jehoiachin, Nebuchadnezzar exiled 3,023 people to Babel. Rashi says that this number is only talking about exiles from Yehuda, and the thousands mentioned in Malachim is referring to all the exiles from all the Shvatim. In Nebuchadnezzar's 18th year, after the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, there were only 832 people left who survived the Galut, who survived the Chorban, left to be exiled. Finally, in the 23rd year, Nebuchadnezzar and Nebuzaradan conquered Sur and Ammon and Moab. Nebuchadnezzar exiled an additional 745 people who had fled to those lands. A mere 4,600 people survived the conquest. Verse 31 jumps forward to the 37th year after the exile of Jehoiachin. These last few psukim allow the Navi to end with positive messages, as we try to do in every Sefer. On the 25th day of Adar, Evel Merodach, in his first year as king of Babel, brought Jehoiachin, king of Yehuda, out of prison. Evel Merodach even gave Jehoiachin more honor than other kings who were in Babel. He gave him clothes which indicated his stature and the honor with which he was being treated. He dined at Evel Merodach's table for the rest of his life, and also got an allowance from the king to support his family. Verse 34, Dvar Yom Biyomo Ad Yom Moso Kol Yemei Chayav. Every day a portion until the day of his death, all the days of his life. In this perek, we read about the history that spanned from the destruction of Yerushalayim to the release of Jehoiachin from jail. The city of Yerushalayim was burnt. Most were killed, but some were exiled to Babel. At the end of the perek, we learn how Jehoiachin, from whom Mashiach will descend, is released from prison and was supported by the son of the man who destroyed his people. The lesson from this perek is really the lesson of the whole Sefer. Verse 33 says that Jehoiachin ate bread before Evel Merodach kol yemei chayav, all the days of his life. The word chayav is generally written with two yuds, but here it is written with only one. In verse 34, the pasuk says that baruchoso aruchas tamid nitna lo me'etz melech Bavel. His meals, his regular meals, were given to him from the king of Bavel. Dvar yom biyomo ad yomo so kol yemei chayav. Each day's needs, on its day, all the days of his life, chayav here is written with two yuds. Rav Breuer explains that chayav with one yud hints to life in this world alone, to the world of physicality, while chayav with two yuds hints to this world and the world to come, the world of physicality and the world of spirituality. In people's eyes, Jehoiachin had to eat bread at someone else's table his whole life. This other king was in control and Jehoiachin was demeaned. No, says Yirmiyahu, Jehoiachin was provided with everything he needed every day for his whole family through the king of Babel. And this happened all the days of his life, written with two yuds. His present and his future is being determined by Hashem, master of this world and the next. Jehoiachin did tshuva, so there was once again hope for the future. Hashem is taking care of him. Others might see Jehoiachin as being dependent on this weird relationship with the son of his oppressor. But a Navi sees that the relationship is miraculous, and that relationship is the vehicle Hashem is using to provide him with all that he needs. When we read the Perek, we could see the story of a weak king who miscalculated and destroyed his country. We saw that the Pasuk told us that reading the storyline in that way was a diversion. The sins were what caused the destruction, not any individual's poor strategies. This was the mistake the nation made throughout the Sefer Yirmiyahu. They kept on trying to control and reason their way out of problems, ignoring the directions from their Navi. This is something we can choose to fix. We can focus on people, who we are angry at, who should be in charge, who didn't invite who has good policies. We could spend our life playing these games that makes us feel active and important, but don't actually do much. Instead, we can ask, what does Hashem want from me now, and how can I remember at all times that Hashem is guiding my life, that He is providing for me today and each day? We work to build our bitachon and make the role of people right-sized. we will lead a blessed life with Hashem as our guarantor, as Yirmiyahu taught us in chapter 17, that when a person has bitachon, he is like a tree, kiavo chom, when it gets too hot, ubishnas batzores, or there is a drought, lo yedag, he won't have to worry. May we all merit to live blessed lives, incorporating the many lessons of Yirmiyahu every day. Thank you for studying together, Leiloi Nishmas, Riva Schwab, Rivka Bas Alexander Sender.